Welcome to TYT. I'm Anna Kasparian. Joining me today is Ben Mankiewicz and Ambria Allen. Obviously, Cenk is out of town, and he will be for the rest of the week. But that's okay, because we have a great show ahead for you guys. What's up?
Hey.
Hey.
How you doing?
Welcome.
Thank you.
I've not done a show with you before.
No. Have we?
I feel like you guys have. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Pretty sure I remember.
Yeah.
Anyway, welcome. Nice to see you.
Thanks. All right, guys. There is a lot of news today and just a lot to report. In the second hour, Grace will be joining me, and we will have one at least fun story.
Good.
But then there are some not so fun stories as well. But nonetheless, a lot of things happening in the political world, a lot of uncivil behavior, and we're going to start off with a perfect example of that. All right. A congressional candidate in Montana has now been charged with misdemeanor assault after he got physical with a reporter from The Guardian. Now, this is Greg Gianforte, who is running in the special election in Montana. And apparently, during a campaign event, he was approached by Ben Jacobs, who is a reporter at The Guardian, who simply wanted to ask a few questions about the Congressional Budget Office's analysis of the Affordable Care Act's replacement.
Asking for the score, and Gianforte had said for some time, because he was trying to avoid it, obviously, we all know that, I'll wait to give you my reaction to the Trump health care bill.
Right.
Until I get the CBO score. And here we are on the day before the election. They had the CBO score, so Ben Jacobs thought, okay, we have the score, now we need your reaction.
So Ben Jacobs does what a journalist is supposed to do. He goes up to this congressional candidate, you know, for this special election in Montana, and asks him, all right, now that we know this analysis, now that we know how much this is gonna cost, and that now that we know that 23 million Americans are expected to be uninsured under Trump's Affordable Care Act replacement, what do you think? And Gianforte didn't want to answer the question. So he was approached by The Guardian's Ben Jacobs, who put a voice recorder to Gianforte's face and began asking if he had a response to the newly released Congressional Budget Office report on the American Health Care Act, the Republican replacement for the Affordable Care Act. Now, this is reporting by Alicia Acuna, who is from Fox News. She was there compiling data for Bret Baier's show, right?
There's a whole Fox News crew there about to do a piece. That's why the candidate was in one place and could be approached.
Right, that's
so
exactly
Ben Jacobs
right.
took advantage of that situation again.
The way that a journalist is supposed to, right. So I'm giving you that context before I play the video, not the video, the audio of what happened. I will explain to you what happened physically based on the account of the Fox News staff that was there and witnessed it. But before that, let's take a listen and we'll come right back.
We'll talk to you about that later.
Yeah, but there's not gonna be time. I'm just curious if you
have to speak with Shane, please.
But you don't.
You guys, the last time you came here, you did the same thing. Get the hell out of here.
Jesus.
Get the hell out of here. The last guy did the same thing. You were the Guardian?
Yes, and you just broke my glasses.
The last guy did the same damn thing.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
Get the hell out of here.
If you'd like me to get the hell out of here, I'd also like to call the police. Can I get you guys' names?
Hey, you gotta leave.
He just body slammed me.
You gotta leave.
Okay, so let me fill in the blanks for you. Alicia Acuna, again from Fox News, wrote about this, and here's what she had to say. Gianforte told him he would get back to him later. Jacobs persisted with his question. Gianforte told him to talk to his press guy, Shane Scanlon. At that point, Gianforte grabbed Jacobs by the neck with both hands and slammed him into the ground behind him. Acuna and her crew watched in disbelief as Gianforte then began punching the reporter. As Gianforte moved on top of Jacobs, he began yelling something to the effect of, "I'm sick and tired of this." So again, here are people from Fox News who witnessed what happened, and they are essentially reinforcing Jacob's account of what occurred. And it's just straight up assault. It's assault, and as a result, he has been charged with misdemeanor assault. But there's some drama regarding that charge as well. I'll get to that in a second.
you know, it's funny. You just took us through an explanation of what happened, and it's the world we live in. I would have done the exact same thing. But it's like we have to say, look, the Fox News person even said it was true.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The fact is, there's no reason to dispute. The audio says it's true. He said, Gianforte said, talk to my press guy, Shane Scanlon. There was an indistinguishable amount of time between finishing the name Scanlon and the beginning of violence.
Right.
So he went, talked to my guy, Shane Scanlon, and just grabbed him choked him. Now, many conservatives, some, more than one conservative that I read on Twitter last night said, hey, politics aside, I know Ben Jacobs. If Ben Jacobs said this happened, it happened. Mm-hmm. Like they're like, he's a good reporter. We know each other. So there's no disputing what happened, but we still feel the need to describe, and obviously part of our job is telling what happened, but it's like we have to get people past this moment of disbelief that we're seeing in the world on Twitter, which is, here's another liberal reporter sort of instigating it. Some of it's even in the Fox News description to me, like, you know, put the recorder in his face. He didn't put it in his face. It's a tape recorder. You put it near the mouth of the subject. It's not
No, what do you mean? You take the tape recorder and you put it in a closet in another room.
Right.
That's how you
this
get the audio.
This is almost certainly what he did.
Yeah.
And his persistence was saying, oh, there won't be time for that because today is the last day of voting. There's no time to get your opinion later. The story's happening
right
now. This is the biggest single domestic issue in this election. You said you'd react to it after this event happened.
Right.
This event happened. It's now.
Right.
It's right now. This is your reaction. I mean, Ben Jacobs did nothing wrong and 100% right.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that, you know, Gianforte is saying, I'm tired of this.
Tired
hasn't
of
started.
What? Yeah, you haven't started. Thank you. Great point.
If you are elected,
yes,
this is going to be this times 10. So you are, you know, you're showing that you're not ready for this position, right?
You're
if this
not
is
ready.
Your reaction before day one, you can't do this.
You're not ready, and you don't actually value constitutional rights. You don't value mm-hmm. freedom of press. You don't respect reporters. In fact, there was an incident prior to this where someone in an audience during an event had said, the media is our number one enemy. What should we do about him? That guy was apparently sitting next to a reporter. And I want to keep calling him Gianforte. Gianforte pointed to the reporter and said something to the effect of, well, there's one of them, you know, trying to make a joke or trying to pass it off as a joke. But now you look back at that situation and you realize, oh, no, that wasn't really a joke. He really thinks of journalists as mm-hmm. the enemy. And guess what? You have to answer questions. You're running for office, you have to answer questions. Running and hiding from reporters and then assaulting them if you don't like the type of questioning that they're giving you is just unacceptable. I mean, where are all the free speech people? Where are all the people who are like, I'm a constitutionalist. I care about the Constitution. No, you don't. You care about the Constitution whenever it's convenient for you. Mm-hmm. But if anyone uses their constitutional rights, in this case, to do their job, mm-hmm. and you don't like the way they're doing their job, then apparently it's okay to assault them.
Now, I will say that in defense of a number of conservatives, there were plenty. Not you know, Paul Ryan, I thought was weak today, saying the
yes.
guy should apologize, but he was super tepid about it. But at least on Twitter, some of the conservatives who I follow or who get retweeted by people I follow were like, hey man, you got to go to jail. That was, the reporter did nothing wrong.
Well, he's unlikely to go to jail. He has been cited for misdemeanor assault. And so the local sheriff said, this doesn't really fall under the category of felony assault, right? But then we find out that the sheriff has some ties to Gianforte. So the sheriff, Brian Goodkin, noted in response to questions that he had made a $250 contribution to Gianforte's campaign. This contribution has nothing to do with our investigation, which is now complete, he said. Okay, I'm sure it has nothing to do with your investigation whatsoever. By the way, two major newspapers.
Three now have dropped
their endorsement of Gianforte. The two that earlier had done so were the Missoulian and the Billings Gazette. They issued scathing denunciations of Gianforte.
Yeah, a third paper did today.
Unfortunately, most votes have already been cast, right? So mm-hmm. he still very well may be elected. And I think it would be great if more Republicans would come forward and denounce this behavior, because as many as on Twitter have said something, not enough have come forward and said, I mean, I don't know how this has become a partisan issue. right? If you body slam a reporter, that's just universally wrong.
And punch him.
And punch him.
Yeah.
Right. If we compare this to the United incident, right, where there was so much outrage about an assault, but somehow now it's a liberal reporter and there are questions.
Once you put, and by the way, I mean, Gianforte didn't even know who that reporter was, right? And so how would he know what Jacob's political leanings are? How would he know what his ideology is? Well, he just didn't want to answer any questions because I guess that question was too difficult for him to answer.
Yeah, I don't know whether liberal or not. I mean, he writes for The Guardian, but Gianforte knows that somebody pestering you about the score, the CBO right. score of the new healthcare bill is eager to point out that the healthcare bill is a disaster and that it will affect Montanans in a very specific way.
Right.
And he didn't want to answer those questions because he has sidestepped it for as long as he possibly could. Nothing beats your line about, I'm sick and tired of this. You're having to start. It's like a draft pick at the NFL draft.
Right.
Being like, I'm tired of this tackling, man.
Right.
I'm out. I can't take any more of this. It's really great.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to Republicans and their response to what happened.
Very quick. I'm sorry. Let me just finish it by saying I was listening to the radio today. I listened to POTUS Radio on Sirius, which I listen to a lot. And it's good. It brings in especially the journalism show, the media room, I can't remember what the hell it's called.
Not as good as Progress, though.
Julia, no, that's right. But if during the day, before we come on, you want to listen to a Julie Mason show, but it's a great idea of what the establishment is saying. I don't say that with much disparaging way, but it is. Here's what everyone there expects, that Gianforte is still going to win. Mm-hmm. And the fact that 75% of the votes were cast before this, Democrats will need a significant turn. The theory, and nobody really knows in Montana, really hard to track because you don't vote by party ID in primary, so you can just come in, you just vote.
Yeah.
But they think that Gianforte, the way to beat him will be with a significant turnout on Election Day, which I guess is today, for Rob Quist.
Well, also keep in mind, though, if you're inclined to vote for someone like Gianforte, his opponent, Rob Quist, he's like the polar opposite, right? He's like a huge Bernie supporter, folk music performer type guy. I mean, like, he has NPR written all over him.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't even think Gianforte plays the banjo, which is, I think, could really swing this thing.
Right. Okay, but anyway, I'm not saying anything negative about Quist. I'm just saying in a race where he's against Gianforte, they couldn't be more different. So I feel like if someone is inclined to vote for Gianforte, I don't think this incident would somehow convince them, oh, maybe Quist is a better option. Anyway, moving on to the response from some Republicans over what happened with Gianforte and Jacobs. All right. Montana congressional candidate Greg Gianforte has been charged with misdemeanor assault after he body slammed a reporter from The Guardian. Now, while some conservatives have come out and denounced that type of violent behavior, there have been some who have made excuses for him. Case in point, Representative Duncan Hunter, he's a Republican from California, and he said the following: it's not appropriate behavior unless the reporter deserved it. Now, he admitted later, I did not read the story, I just saw the headline. Well, perhaps you should avoid commenting until you know the facts of the story. But anyway,
he's a Republican.
Yeah, I know.
Read the story, doesn't read books.
Now, we have some other examples of Republicans who, you know, gave a very weak response in regard to this story. Let's go to Trent Franks.
The left has precipitated this tense, confrontational approach throughout the country in recent months.
You know, it's interesting because in some regard, Republicans come off as strong, right? They come off as people who are more willing to fight for what they want in policy or, you know, either domestically or foreign policy. But when it comes to people asking them questions, when it comes to reporters asking them questions, they lose it. Like, they can't handle it.
You know, to that point, Anna, if there is one good thing to come out of a Trump win, it is this sort of reawakening or insurgence of attitude and drive in journalism, right? Mm-hmm. Sort of seeing such an obvious enemy has awakened, I think, journalism in general. Not some, plenty of it was going along fine before, but some of it needed a kick in the pants. And so to some extent, what Trent Franks is saying is true, because in his world, the way things have been for 25 or 30 years is the right wing and Republicans have led policy after policy. Sometimes the Democrats have gone along, and rarely have they offered a robust alternative. And they've been, we're having a debate about policy in this country that is at best right of center, and to some extent is just further right of center. And Republicans have been punching at working class and with Democratic compliance too often, have been punching at working class Americans and lower class Americans and poor Americans for decades and decades and decades. And now in these rallies and in these town halls where people have shown up, they're punching back. And that's not something they've experienced. So to Trent Franks, this is a fairly new experience to him, because their world has been to punch and punch and punch. And now finally, when somebody punches back, they say, why are you being so confrontational? Here's what happens. I grab your shirt, I punch you and I punch you and I punch you. I take money out of your pocket, which you can barely feed your kids with, and I give it to me and my rich friends, and I punch you again. And now you're knocking my hand away and fighting back. What is wrong with you? This is not, this is not what's going on. And I'm being over the top metaphorically, but it is clearly we are seeing a degree of outrage at Republicans, I think mostly, and also at Democrats, for a manner of governing that has gone on too long. That is unquestionably what Bernie Sanders tapped into, and it is to some extent what Donald Trump benefited for by falsely tapping into it.
I will say that Trent Franks is wrong in saying that the left precipitated this kind of aggression between the press and, you know, representatives. Your president precipitated this aggression along the campaign trail. And it's not to say that there's a causal link between what happened with Gianforte and this reporter and Trump, but he definitely sets the tone from the top, and things like this can flourish in the era of Trump.
Right. I think, look, my takeaway from all of this is, obviously, do not ever resort to violence. Don't ever get physical. But don't let Republicans intimidate you. If you're in the media or if you're a liberal, don't let them, or if someone who just has a conscience or any ethics, don't let them intimidate you from fighting for what you know is right. Because this is their reaction to people who are questioning their authority, to people who are challenging some of their policy proposals and how disastrous it'll be for a huge chunk of the American population. Don't let them intimidate you. Trent Franks thinks we're precipitating this type of whatever it is. Go ahead and think whatever you want, right? But they have this amazing ability to act violently, to disrespect American citizens, journalists, the Constitution, and then turn around and point fingers at us as if we're doing it. No, 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 we're not doing this. We're not the ones that are getting violent. We're not the ones who had a campaign that literally advocated for violence against protesters at rallies, okay? I mean, what is he even talking about? But Trent Franks, okay, go ahead.
I just mean, but to me, the violence, when it's physical violence, when it's protesters being physically violent, or the guards of or that, you know, the henchmen of Republican candidates creating the violence, I think what the violence that the have-nots are feeling is that we create this giant permanent underclass, and that we have created for three decades, policies which take money from regular Americans and enhance the wealth of the richest Americans. As that gap between rich and poor gets bigger and bigger and bigger, there is a degree of economic violence. That's what this outrage is. That's what Trent Franks is talking about. He's not talking about violence. Ben Jacobs wasn't violent in any way. But he is talking about a aggressive attitude at these town halls. He's talking about, hey, what happened to the point where you guys, you just wrote some emails or you made some phone calls? They are uncomfortable with this wave. And I do not want a revolution in this country the way we see revolutions elsewhere. I want a legitimate political, I want a sea change in politics. But if folks like Trent Franks, and to some extent Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein too, just to use them as representative of mainstream Democratic politicians, if they're not careful, as that gap gets wider and wider, you're going to lose any semblance of control over a particularly robust and angry set of have-nots who will no longer accept, as Ben Jacobs represented as a member of the press, will no longer accept you not commenting on the most important piece of domestic legislation facing the people in that state.
Right.
But for 30 years, they haven't had to respond, or they give a nonsense response that doesn't, and their feet are being held to the fire, and that's welcoming. But they better wake up, or the degree of disorder that we've had in this country will rival 1968 or exceed it.
Yeah, elected officials, for some reason, think that they don't have to abide or you know, essentially do their jobs, like, because they have gotten away with it for a long time. So now, all of a sudden, since people are challenging them and asking them, hey, why don't you represent the people who elected you, and why don't you answer to these disastrous policies that you're signing on to, they can't handle it, right? They lose it. Well, guess what? Every other person in this country who has a job is expected to do their job properly. If you don't want to do your job properly, then get the hell out of office. Don't run again. Okay, don't rely on us paying your salary so you can continue to not represent us and actually work against us. And I love the aggression against these elected officials. And again, for the 50 billionth time, never physical, always, you know, aggressively vocalizing what it is that you're dissatisfied with. I think that's important. They don't like having their feet held to the fire. If they can't handle it, they shouldn't be in office. Finally, let's go to Paul Ryan and his statement on the whole debacle.
Altercations. There is no time where a physical altercation should occur with the press or with just between human beings. So that is wrong, and it should not have happened. Should the gentleman apologize? Yeah, I think he should apologize.
Okay, so that statement by itself isn't so bad, but he followed it with this.
If he wins, will you see him? If he wins, he has been chosen by the people of Montana, who their Congress is going to be. I'm going to let the people of Montana decide who they want as their representative.
So he was asked, you know, if Gianforte wins, will he seat him? And that he essentially said, yeah, we will, because if he gets elected, that's who the people have chosen.
Man, I hope Rob Quist wins. If nothing else, then to increase the number of sitting congressmen who can play bluegrass music.
Right.
Which I'm guessing is pretty low.
Yeah. Does he play the banjo or something?
He plays the banjo.
Oh, it's the banjo.
Yeah.
What did we think it was?
I don't remember. I don't remember what I thought he played, but I didn't know.
First of all, he may play many instruments. He appears to be musically talented. I'm not trying to make fun of Rob Quist, but playing the banjo is funny. Just is.
All right. Let's leave.
You know who
else
plays the banjo, by the way? He's a brilliant band. Steve Martin.
Really? You know way too much about who plays banjo.
Steve Martin plays the banjo, tours with a successful bluegrass band playing the banjo. Like, on, then thousands of people come to see this band play, and Steve Martin plays the banjo. Steve Martin is success and his ability to do many different things brilliantly. Write plays, he writes books, he's funny, he's a star, he's like one of the foremost art collectors in America.
This is
the most Ben Mankiewicz tangent of all Ben Mankiewicz tangents. Continue, it's fascinating.
He's one of the leading art collectors in the country, right? How does he write a novel? How does he write successful, brilliant little short novels? Steve Martin and be funny.
Do you know anyone who plays the banjo?
I know, but I don't care.
I do now.
Right. Doug from Nickelodeon played the banjo.
Doug from
Nickelodeon. You guys can check that. I think you can fact check that. I think he did play.
Who's
the banjo.
Doug from Nickelodeon?
It's a generational thing.
Thanks.
You guys are a wealth of banjo knowledge. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, Bernie Sanders making people feel the burn. Such a great story. You don't want to miss it, so come right back. Welcome back to TYT. Anna, Ben, and Ambria with you. All right, some TYT lies for you guys. Ben Peck says, if Gianforte's already sick and tired of answering reporters' questions, maybe don't run for public office? Yeah, I completely agree. And then finally, Eric Rooney, a tweet that I think Ben will like. Ben, your air banjo is amazing. You should tour. Okay. So there's no reason for you to be jelly of Steve Martin.
I'm not jealous of him. I hate him. Like, enough.
That's better. That's better, yeah.
We like, our lives are already hard enough not to have Steve Martin like be great at 9 different things, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
No respect.
And then a few announcements that I want to make before we move on.
Love an announcement.
There was a Classics episode, TYT Classics, for our members. That's where we play super, super old videos from TYT, and then we comment on them and see if our views have changed at all. If you are interested in watching and you are a member, you can go to tytnetwork.com/classics, TYT Classics.
What was the last one you did?
So, we were discussing whether it's worse if women cheat or men cheat. Mm. And what are the motivations based on gender?
I think it's definitely worse if women cheat. I think that's a fact.
Worse for who?
Me. That's
yeah.
Unless they're cheating with you.
Yeah. That video.
A wrinkle. Yeah.
I was in that video and it made me cringe a little bit, but you guys should check it out. It's really good. Aggressive Progressives is live tonight from 9 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Jimmy Dore, Malcolm, and Graham Elwood will be the guests. And then a lot of other stuff. You should become a TYT member. Go to tytnetwork.com/join. You can become a member, you'll support our show, and you'll get all this awesome exclusive content. All right, let's move on to Bernie Sanders. You guys ready?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. Bernie Sanders was questioning White House budget chief Nick Mulvaney in regard to Donald Trump's budget proposal. Now, for anyone who's been paying attention, you know that the budget proposal would cut funding for a lot of programs that underprivileged Americans rely on, while giving the wealthiest Americans more tax cuts. Now, of course, this is something that Bernie Sanders is not too pleased about, which is why he took the opportunity to ask budget chief Nick Mulvaney some pretty difficult questions that Mulvaney kind of stumbled with. So let's take a look at the first video where Sanders specifically talks about these tax cuts for the wealthy.
Mr. Mulvaney, as you know, the United States today has more income and wealth inequality than any major country on earth. Top 0.1% now owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%. 52% of all new income today is going to the top 1%. But your budget thinks that it is good public policy to provide $52 billion in tax breaks to the wealthiest family in this country, a family already worth $128 billion. So my question is pretty simple. And I want you to tell the American people why you think it is a good idea to give $3 trillion in tax breaks to the top 1% at a time when the rich are becoming much richer, while at the same time you're going to throw 17 million children in this country off of health insurance because of the unconscionable cuts that you are making to Medicaid? Why are you going to throw seniors in the state of Wyoming or the state of Vermont off the Meals on Wheels program, maybe the one nutritious program that they get a day? Why you're going to throw women and low-income babies off of the WIC program at a time when infant mortality rates in this country was already high? Do you really think it is a great idea to tell a low-income pregnant woman that you're going to take away the WIC program, take away nutrition programs from children in order to give a massive tax break of $52 billion to the Walton family? Please explain your logic to the American people.
Damn. Just so fiery.
It's so good. I want to know what Mulvaney was writing.
He's like FML. Get me out of here. Yeah. I am extremely uncomfortable with this man yelling at me right now.
Yeah,
like,
what
it was
the notes?
So good.
What
I
are
know,
the notes?
I know. Pretending like you're writing notes. And by the way, I'm being a little unfair because maybe he is writing notes. Like, oh, wait, look into the fact that this would give $52 billion in tax breaks to the Walton family. Is that really true? That
he's aware.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was an incredible line of questioning from Bernie Sanders. That is the type of, I don't want to say performance, because it's not really a performance, but that's the type of behavior by Bernie Sanders that I think made a lot of people want him to be the Democratic nominee. You know, why so many young people wanted to support him and wanted to see him win the election. And he's a fighter, and it's amazing. So look, that's just the beginning of it, okay? Obviously, we didn't even give you guys a chance to check how Mulvaney responded. So let's go to the next video where you will see how he responds and judge for yourself whether or not you believe anything he says.
WIC serves all the projected participants. There's no change there. Meals on Wheels is not reduced at all. The change that we make is through the
CBDG program, which you eliminate.
The block grant thing.
So you eliminate the block grant. You tell me that doesn't, that funds the program. You tell me that doesn't have an impact on the program.
The program is funded, Senator, through the old age or senior nutrition program, I think through HHS, which we don't change.
No, that's not true.
No, it is true, actually. The CDBG program is a block grant to the states, yes. And some states do choose to use some
and
of that
you eliminate
money on
that program.
Wheels, and that total.
All right, the bottom line is.
Senator, I mean, if you.
Go ahead, answer the question.
The total money for Meals on Wheels that comes from CDBG is 3%. That's it.
Yeah,
and I don't know how you can possibly contend that we're going to.
But you are eliminating the program that funds not only Meals on Wheels, but many other programs at the discretion of governors and banks.
I would be more than happy to have a long discussion about CDBGs. You asked about Medicaid as well. The slashing of Medicaid, the dramatic cuts to Medicaid, is a slower growth rate in Medicaid. Medicaid spending goes up every
year. Yeah, but so does healthcare inflation. We go through these games every single year. Inflation is going up a lot faster than the money that you're putting in.
What I love is how prepared he is to respond to the games that politicians play in general, right? Because you can skew the argument and kind of twist the argument in a way that makes it seem like, no, it's no big deal. We're not really cutting that much from these programs that help the poor. But you know, Bernie came in prepared, knowing what he's talking about, and that's important. That's important. So
I'm going to disagree a little bit. I obviously I love the passion from Bernie, and I love the intent. I think that politically he gave Mulvaney, who is a loathsome, unctuous, repulsive liar.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be too strong, but he's a horrible, horrible guy. Politically, he may well love his children. By being specific on things like Meals on Wheels, he allows Mulvaney to get into the minutiae of Meals on Wheels and gives him arguably a rhetorical win on, hey, we're cutting 3% from Meals on Wheels. How can you argue that this is? And on the Medicaid thing where he's like, hey, it's just increasing. It's increasing at a slower rate. And then Bernie, to me, ends up being defensive as opposed to, again, an overall no shift in tone, no shift in anger when income inequality is getting worse and worse, when 0.1% own as much as 90% of everybody else, what kind of monsters end up giving $52 billion to the Walton families and $3 trillion to the richest Americans in the country? Who, obviously, why isn't that money being directed to the poorest Americans, to middle-class Americans, to programs that work, rather than allowing him to specifically retort certain points, which again, Mulvaney's the director of the Office of Management and Budget. He's not going to be unprepared completely to defend his points.
Right. I mean, he's not unprepared because he has his talking points prepared,
right.
and he, you know, try to utilize them in that argument. But look, right now what we're doing is a play-by-play. And I think if you do a play-by-play, there are moments where Bernie comes off as stronger and there are moments where Mulvaney comes out a little stronger, but not, in my opinion, not really. I think the saddest part about all of this is, I think the vast majority of Americans are never even gonna see this exchange.
Right.
They're not gonna even be aware of Mulvaney's arguments and his, you know, persistent lies on these issues, which is the worst part about all of this. But I wanna give you a chance to jump in.
No, I think to your point, I think, you know, when you talk about inequality, I think to Bernie's credit is that you have to put a face on what inequality looks like. So when you mention WIC, when you mention Meals on Wheels, granted, if voters ever see this, it lets them know how they'll personally be impacted. Because sometimes when you speak too generally, people tend to conflate other folks with inequality as opposed to themselves. You get Meals on Wheels, right? You're affected by Medicaid and Medicare, and it's not just those other people. So I think it is a delicate dance that you have to do when you talk about inequality, is also personalize it for folks who think that that's them.
That's actually a really good point, because just today, CNN ran a fascinating story about an elderly woman who voted for Trump. And based on his budget proposal, if it goes through, her SSI benefits would just be gone. And that's what she relies on to live. And so she was interviewed by CNN and she was like, I didn't expect him to go after, you know, my safety net. I didn't expect him to go after a program that helps me. And so being, I know it's frustrating, right? Because this is the kind of stuff, you know, working in the news side of things, this is the kind of stuff that we've been reporting on over and over again and trying to get it through everyone's heads that these people are not looking out for you. But regardless, I think it is important to mention the specific programs that are going to experience cuts. I think it is important to personalize it because we're like living in this weird society where it's us versus them with everything. Mm-hmm. And it can't be that way. All of us are going to be impacted in some negative fashion if we allow this type of budget proposal to go through. There is one last video that I want to toss to. This is where Sanders is demanding Mulvaney answer to why the richest people in this country get a tax break, whereas the poorest people will be hurt the most. Take a look.
Bottom line is, tell me, let me get back to one question.
Sure.
Why do you think the Walton family needs a $52 billion tax break?
My guess is that you're basing that assertion on the only tax detail that we have in the budget.
The repeal of the estate tax. Exactly.
Right. And if we want to have a talk about why we're repealing that, I'd be more than happy to do
that. Good. Let's tell me.
Because ordinary people are paying more.
No, ordinary people do not have a wealth of $128 billion.
The average,
that's not an ordinary person.
The average increase across this nation since
you're not answering the question. The question is
105%.
Answer the question. The wealthiest family in America gets a $52 billion tax break as a result of the repeal of the estate tax.
That's correct.
Tell the American people why you think that's good when you cut Medicaid and you cut programs for kids.
We don't cut Medicaid. We're talking about repealing Obamacare. The results
that you
mentioned.
Throwing 23 million people off of health insurance. That's right.
Which is a CBO number that I think you just agreed could be wrong.
No, I didn't agree to that at all.
Okay. That we repeal Obamacare.
Why does a billionaire family get a $52 billion tax break? Please tell the American people.
Because we think it's wrong that real ordinary folks lose coverage. And we want to get rid of
ordinary people. Is the Walton family an ordinary family?
No, they're not. They're extraordinary. But ordinary people are losing coverage today under Obamacare.
I ask you why the wealthiest family in America is getting a $52 billion tax
break. And I'm answering the question by saying because we repeal Obamacare.
No, you and the estate tax, which applies to the top 0.2%.
Senator, okay, I'm sorry. I thought the assumption was we were looking at the tax, the tax reductions that are contained in Obamacare.
No, that's not what we're talking about. No.
Okay,
we're talking about the repeal of the estate tax, which you just mentioned.
The budget assumes a deficit-neutral tax plan, because when we wrote the budget, we did not have nearly enough specifics to assume what you're assuming, which is the specific reductions. Yes, the proposals that the White House published about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the principles that we set forth, does include a reduction of the estate tax.
Repeal of the estate tax, sir.
You said, yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. It is a repeal of the estate tax, but I think it's mathematically impossible to take those general principles and assume a direct impact on a particular family. Nobody can do it. I've seen estimates from groups that say, oh, that's going to add
that's
the deficit
not, that's,
by $2 trillion to $10 trillion.
People that's really not true.
Well, that one I'll give to Bernie. But again, that was specific. He gave him, there were fewer ways. The other one gave him too many outs.
Yeah.
But that's and I don't want to seem nitpicky, but that's an issue I think that Bernie has, is that you give him enough, you fire at enough things and then you just respond to one. But there, I mean, you know, he's like, oh, you're talking about the estate tax? I said the estate tax 12 times. Everybody knows we're talking about the estate tax. And of course, as we know, there is no argument for the estate tax that affects regular Americans, because even now, and what Democrats would ultimately agree to are exemptions that I think now are in the neighborhood of, I don't have it in front of me, but it's like $3 million per person or $6 million. So unless your estate, you're like tax free through $5 or $6 million of the estate. So family farms, that makes them exempt. We're not talking about, you gotta have, before you get an ounce of estate tax, you gotta be inheriting more than like $7 million.
Yeah.
So we're not, you know, or in some cases it might be a little bit lower, but I mean, millions and millions of dollars come to you tax free. If your parents die of their house and it's worth $726,000, you're not taxed on
it. You're not taxed on it.
Yeah.
Exactly. I love that exchange. I love how strong Bernie is. I love that he continues to fight, even though he's not campaigning for anything right now. That's what we need. We need politicians that are actually looking out for those who are powerless, who don't have anyone, you know, voicing their concerns. All right, we have to take a break, so let's do that. And when we come back, a little tiff between Britain and the United States over the Trump administration, or at least members of the Trump administration, leaking information about the terrorism investigation in Britain. Details on that and more when we come back. Welcome back to TYT. All right.
And if you're in Montana and you haven't voted, I think it's same day registration. Send a thug home, or he's already home, but don't let him leave home and go to Washington. And send Rob Quist and take his banjo
and the
to
banjo.
Congress.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. All right. There are two stories that I want to make sure I get to, so let's get to it right now. Earlier today, Prime Minister Theresa May stated that maybe it's not such a great idea to share intelligence with US officials, considering the fact that there are members of Trump's administration who continuously leak information about investigations to US press.
Members of the administration, yes, members, including the main member of the administration.
Right, exactly, who apparently loves leaking information because he thinks he has the right to. Now, of course, there is an ongoing investigation in Britain right now regarding the recent terrorist attack during an Ariana Grande concert. And there are parts of that investigation that are sensitive and are classified. However, some of that information was leaked to the New York Times by American officials. And as a result, Theresa May said that maybe it's not such a great idea to share intel with Americans. Now, in a statement, Mrs. May's office said she would bring up the matter to a NATO gathering in Brussels on Thursday evening and would make clear to President Trump that intelligence that is shared between our law enforcement agencies must remain secure. May's statement followed expressions of outrage by top law enforcement officials after the New York Times published images on Wednesday of the shrapnel backpack and battery used by Salman Abedi, the 22-year-old bomber who killed 22 people and injured 64 outside the Manchester arena. Now, there is an update to this story. It is somewhat breaking. Apparently, Britain has decided to resume intelligence sharing with the United States after suspending the practice amid media leaks by American officials. Apparently, they're doing this because of fresh assurances that we are now working closely with our key partners around the world, including all those in the Five Eyes Intelligence Alliance. The US, UK, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand share intelligence in one of the world's tightest multilateral agreements. Or arrangements, I should say. All right, so I guess they're going to share intel, but
it's just, it was not, there was no threat of him not sharing intel, but it was a sign that the Trump administration leaks like a sieve, and many times intentionally, because they can't get Donald Trump to do anything. So I don't know if that was the case here. But now Trump, of course, and Jeff Sessions want to investigate the leaks, as if when you don't have to go much farther than the Oval Office to investigate some of the biggest leaks. But yes, the special relationship between Great Britain and the United States continues, despite a story that we're not getting to because the day is filled with news, despite Trump giving his speech today and despite assurances from White House officials, really not in any way mentioning or supporting Article 5, the key component of NATO, further sort of apparently throughout Western Europe, you know, to some extent shockwaves, but certainly some despair and concern that Trump is not fully committed to exercising the key component of NATO, which means coming to the defense of partners.
Right, exactly, because he feels that they're not paying their fair share, right?
And this is a person who hasn't paid their taxes.
And has filed for bankruptcy.
Yeah, like,
No, but he's smart, man. Like, he's taking advantage of like all these loopholes and stuff because he's smart. He's smart because he doesn't pay his taxes.
Is that a Trump voter or Haas?
Both. No, Haas wouldn't make that stupid argument, but he does kind of talk like that.
He does kind of talk. He does sound like that. Yeah, that's the
Yeah, exactly. But look, there are a lot of leaks coming from the White House right now. And it does put some relationships with our closest allies in jeopardy. And I just, everything's been a complete disaster. Like, whether it's policy proposals coming from the Trump administration or, you know, we didn't even get to the story about the COO within the Education Department just flat out quitting. He had a five-year contract that began under the Obama administration. He's like, I can't work with Betsy DeVos. She's forcing me to testify that the federal government is giving out too much money in student loans.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, student aid, not loans.
Right.
And he's like, no, I'm not going to testify. That's ridiculous.
Did you guys do Ben Carson yesterday?
And then there's the Ben Carson story, which we will get to today, where he says poverty is just, you know, it's a state of mind.
State of mind.
Not really a thing. It's just, what if you are a Trump supporter who's watching this show? First of all, I respect you for watching this show because we bashed on him quite a bit.
Thanks, Drew. Become a member.
Yeah, become a member. But secondly, what's wrong with you? Like, what more do you need? What more do you need? What more do you need? Okay, there are people in the White House right now who are leaking information to reporters because Trump is a disaster, right? They can't work with him. No one seems to really like him. His approval rating is incredibly low. He's causing all this trouble with NATO allies. He's causing all this trouble with, you know, pretty much any country with his loose talk and his misunderstanding or lack of understanding of any type of political issue. Like, he's so incredibly uneducated on the issues. And it's translating into a disaster.
Yeah, he in effect undermines everything that he sets forth as you know, an agenda. And just particularly about counterterrorism, which was one of his major platforms, like that relies on sharing information,
right?
Like in a way that can be trusted. And if you can't do that, then it completely undermines our ability to fight terrorism internationally. So
it's devastating. But at least Britain has decided to continue sharing intel. It is important that we work together, and we'll see how this goes in the future. But again, these leaks have started from day one, and I just don't see them stopping. And by the way, anyone who's criticizing the New York Times for reporting on you know, the information that they received through the leaks, that's what journalists do.
Yeah, and they checked. They're not, there was no, you know, if it jeopardizes an invest, you know, they withhold stuff all the time.
They do, yes. Yeah. All right, I want to end the first hour with a little bit of a fun story. And it does involve Trump, but I promise you it's fun. So there is a video circulating around the internet showing Donald Trump shoving a NATO leader, okay? So this NATO leader is actually Prime Minister Milo Djukanovic of Montenegro. And it's amazing because it's indicative of who Donald Trump is as a person, and it shows you what he really thinks of himself. Take a look. It's the jacket.
I hate that.
Like the shove is one thing, but the jacket.
Like, no, it's like he did. I got a lot of crap for it because, you know, he's like said it during the campaign. He's like a gorilla, right? You know, and the sort of the big man who's like always, no, I'm in charge, and then pounds his fist. But for Trump, it's always like, now I'm here. I'm in front. I'm the guy. I'm the lead. I mean, he is a base animal at our worst. It's the worst of humanity exemplified right there.
It really is. And how do you respond to that? Because everybody maintains some semblance of professionalism around him.
Right. Yes.
I kind of want people to be like, yo. Like, you know what I mean? Like, don't push me.
Yeah.
Like, check some of the ridiculousness. Like, meet him at his ridiculousness.
What's the Montenegrin leader's name?
Milo Djukanovic. I totally agree with you because I always put myself in those situations and try to think about how I would react.
Right.
And I know that I would struggle to react as calmly as the Prime Minister did. Look at him. He gave him a pat on the back afterwards. And that's so incredible.
Yeah.
And it's so classy and professional. And I give him a lot of credit for it. But yeah, I mean, in any other context, can you imagine someone doing that and people being okay with it?
Sure.
Can you imagine me coming on this stage in this studio and just being like, oh, Ben's in the middle. Fuck that. I want to be in the middle.
Right. Yeah, fix your jacket. Yeah.
Unacceptable.
Totally. Yeah. I don't buy the when, you know, They go low, we go high. When they go low,
sorry,
I go lower.
I knocked your mic off. Anyway, I think we're running out of time. We gotta go. We gotta take a break.
I'll sign off. That's it. I'm signing off.
All right, guys.
Young Turks, see ya.